Today's shir is Masecht Baba Metzia, Daf Samach Dalad, and we will begin on Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, 6 lines from the bottom. Vamar Rav Nachman says, Rav Nachman, Hai man de oizif pshita mechavrei, if somebody borrows some small change from someone else, va'ashkech bei tufayna, and he finds more coins than he requested, oi ibechdei shadas toya, if the amount that he finds is the amount that one can make a mistake about, which the Gemara will explain in a moment, what that, how we make that calculation, then mechayiv ladurile. Then he would have to return the extra that he received. Vimlaf, but if it doesn't fall into that category of bechdei shadas toya, matana ba'almahu de yavle, we assume that he's just giving him a gift, and there the halacha will be that the person who receives it may keep it. As we begin this Gemara, the obvious question, which is actually the Ritva's question, comes to mind. Why do we have to start making assumptions, asked Ritva? Why don't we just ask the person, why you gave me more than I requested? And as we get, hopefully, deeper into the sugya, will be able to understand an answer to Ritva's question. Before we go further, there's machlokes rishonim. What happens if the person who lent me the money comes and says that he made a mistake and he gave me more than he was supposed to? So the Hagos Maimonides, the Hagos Mordechai, says that even under those circumstances, I may keep the money. The Rosh, however, disagrees, and the Rosh says certainly that if the person who gave me more says that he gave me by mistake more, I would have to return the extra money that I received. Al Gemara is referring to a situation where the Malva gave the Loiva more than the Loiva had asked for, more than the Loiva was supposed to receive. What would be the Halacha if the Loiva gives the Malva more than he was supposed to receive? What would be the halacha? So the Magen Mishnah says in that case, certainly the Malva has to give back the Loiva the extra that he received, because it's certainly a situation of ribbis if the Malva receives more than he was supposed to. However, it's interesting to note that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the Malva could keep what's extra. And it's somewhat difficult to understand the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Isn't this a situation of ribbis, at least ribbis to Rabbanon, where the Malva is receiving more than he was supposed to? So the Bach and Taz answer that giving a gift when you repay a loan is only considered ribbis if the Loiva notifies the Malva that he's giving the gift. However, if it's done, like in the case of Al Gemara, where Malva may never even ever realize, perhaps, they was given extra money, so they say that it's considered a gift and not ribbis and will be mutter. The Chavistas, however, says that certainly the Shulchan Aruch will agree that on Lechatchila, the Loiva may not give the Malva extra money when he's repaying him. It certainly falls under the category of ribbis. The Chavistas says that the Shulchan Aruch is referring to a situation b'di'evid, when the Loiva already gave the extra money, and the Shulchan Aruch is saying that if the Loiva, who improperly gave the Malva extra money, the Malva under these circumstances may keep it. Because as we said, it's maybe only ribbis d'rabbanan, and the ribbis d'rabbanan were more lenient in the din of returning it. Says the Gemara, so he said if it was the amount, so that's b'chdei shadas toya, an understandable mistake, there the person has to return the extra money. Hey chidami, asked the Gemara, b'chdei shadas toya, Amr of Achab Reid Reb Yosef, b'chdei shadas toya is basraisa v'chum mashaisa. The Rishonim explain it in the following way. Let's say I asked to borrow from you $5. $5 in dimes. $5 in coins. So what many people will do is, since there's a lot of dimes that are going to be given to me, what a lot of people will do is that they'll make piles of dimes. Now, the piles that they make will either be dimes, piles of five dimes, piles of 10 dimes. Those are the kind of dimes that piles that a person will make. And if I'm borrowing $5, I'll either have 10 piles of, he'll either have 10 piles of 5 dimes apiece, or I'll have 5 piles of 10 dimes apiece. Let's say he gives me, instead of $5, he ends up giving me $6, or he ends up giving me $5.50. It's very obvious what happened here. What happened was, he made an extra pile. And because he made an extra pile of dimes, that's why it's an obvious mistake, and I have to return it. But let's say he would give back to me, for example, $5.80. Now, people who gather together money will not typically count the money by 80 cents. So there it's obvious that it wasn't because he made an error when he was counting together the piles of dimes that he was going to give me. And there we have to assume that it was with a reason that he gave me more than I was supposed to. And as the Rishonim point out, that let's say, as we just said, if I was supposed to get $5 in dimes, I got $5.50, we're able to understand how that happened. Let's say I got $5.80. Do we say the 50 cents of that 80 cents were because he made a mistake in counting out the money, and the extra 30 cents is because he wanted to give me 30 cents more? Or do we say, since we have a situation where we don't have a shraisa of a chamshaisa, there's these extra 30 cents, then we have to assume that the entire 80 is not because b'chdei shadas toya. And it seems unanimous between all the Rishonim that we count the entire 80 as extra. We don't divide that extra, that 80 into 50 and to 30. Amalei, Rav Achaberei, the Rav of Ashi, we said that if he gave me, in our example, 80 cents extra, there we could assume it was because he wanted to give me a gift. Ask the Gemara, V'inish Tekifahu, let's say the person who's giving me this gift is a person who's not a generous person, and therefore it's hard to believe that he's giving me a gift. The Layav Matana, my, why do we attribute this overage to? Amalei, answers Rav Ashi, Dilma Migza Gazle, perhaps once he stole from me, Ve'ivlele Bechezben, and now he wants to return it to me, and how will he return? And this is the way he finds to return it to me. The Tanya, as the halacha is, Hagoizel Schaveroi, if somebody steals from someone else, Ve'vlele Bechezben, and he doesn't give it to him straight, he just gives it to him amongst other monies that he owes him, Yotza, he is Yotza, the chiv of returning what he stole from me. And as the Mefarshim explained, certainly if the halacha were to be that I have to become aware, and this helps us now understand the question that we began the shiur with, certainly if the halacha were that for somebody to be mekayim the obligation that to return to me something that he stole from me, he asked, I have to know that he's returning it to me. So if such were the situation, I would have to tell him, you gave me extra, or I would have to ask him, why did you give me extra? And he would have to tell me, I gave you extra because I stole from you. But now we're learning that he can be mekayim the mitzvah. He can be mekayim the obligation of returning to me, just by returning it to me, without even telling me that he's returning it to me. So now we understand why I shouldn't ask him anything. Because maybe he's returning to me something that he stole from me, but he doesn't want to tell me that he had stolen from me, but he does want to return it to me, and that's why it's done in this quiet, unassuming manner, and I shouldn't make any notification of it. The Gemara Masechta Bava Kama, however, does point out that this approach of not telling me that he's returning something that he stole from me is acceptable only in a situation where he can assume that I will become aware of the money that was being returned to me. In other words, there's a situation where I check my pockets and I know what's in my pockets and I'll notice that I have extra money. But if I am an individual, we learn in the Gemara at the end of Masechta Bava Kama, that is not aware necessarily of extra money that I have in my pocket, then the halach is this would not be adequate. As says the Gemara, however, what would be the halacha? The inisht asim alma. Let's say the person is not a person who I regularly interact with. The loy shak of a tar bahadei. My, we can't attribute it to gzeila that he's returning money to me. Ask the mafarshim. Do I necessarily only do business, only get money back? Is the only person that steals from me a person who I know? Isn't it possible that the person who stole from me is a person who I don't know and he's returning money to me? So Farshim answer, this is again shot in the Gemara. When we speak about gzeila in this Gemara, it doesn't mean the typical situation of gzeila where somebody steals from me money. It refers to a situation that I do business with someone, and maybe in the course of doing business with that individual, he took money that wasn't coming to him. So the Gemara's question is very understandable. If it's a person who I normally do business with, so there we can understand that the person, in the course of our doing business, might have taken something that doesn't belong to him. But if this is a person that I never interact with, at least on a business level, how would he have to return money to me? Amale. So answer the Gemara. Maybe what happened here was, Dama Inish Achreina Gazle. Maybe somebody else stole from me. Vamale. And he tells this person who I regularly do business with, Ki Yazib Piloni Pshitimnach, when this person borrows money from you, because he knows that I regularly interact with this other individual, that I borrow money from him, he tells him, Ivalei Becheshbin, give him some extra, like that I could get the money I took from him returned to him. Ask the Rishash, why don't we say that the person who I don't normally borrow money from, but wants to give me a gift, tells the person who I normally borrow from, I want to give him a gift. And this is the way I'll be able to give him a gift, by you giving him some extra money. Answers the Rishash, that if somebody wants to give me a gift, he's not going to want to give me a gift in a way that I should never know he gave me a gift. The whole purpose of giving a gift is that I should be notified that I received a gift. And therefore, that can't be the consideration of this Gemara. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Kahana, Hav Yisivna B'Shili Perkei D'Rav. I was sitting at the end of the shir of Rav. V'Shamrita Ka'amri, I heard that he was saying, Kari Kari. He was talking about cucumbers. V'lo Yodana Mai Kamar. And I did not understand what Rav meant to say when he was speaking about cucumbers. Basta Kam Rav. After Rav got up, Amalihu, I asked Rav's Talmidim, my Kari Kari the Kamar Rav, what did Rav mean when he spoke about cucumbers? Amale, so he responded to me, Hachi Kamar Rav, Hai man the Yav Zuzi Liganoa Kari. If somebody gives money to a gardener for cucumbers growing in his garden, the Ozli Asari Kari B'nei Zarta, and cucumbers that are the length of a half amma, are going 10 of such smaller cucumbers for Zuz. Vamala, and the gardener says to me, Yahavne Loch B'nei Garmida, I'll give you 10 amma long cucumbers for Zuz. Isnu, so the halachi is, if the farmer has in his possession already cucumbers that are that large, shari, then the halacha is that such a transaction is permitted. Less new, but if he doesn't have in his possession such large cucumbers, then usur, that it's usur, because this is a situation that we discussed in the previous shiur of a forward contract. And as we discussed in the previous shiur, forward contracts are mutter only in a situation where yeshloi, where he actually has the item in his possession. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara, and that's the way we're going to learn the Gemara. There are other Rishonim, the Rashba and the Ritva, that learn the Gemara differently. They explain the Gemara is that if the seller has cucumbers, makes no difference what size cucumbers he has, then the deal will be, transaction will be mutter. But if he doesn't have cucumbers that large, the deal will not be mutter. Pshita. Ask the Gemara, why did Rav have to say this? This is what we learned in the previous year, that only if Yeshloi, only if the seller actually has the item of forward contracts mutter. Answers the Gemara, Madatema, Kim de Mele Karovu, since the small cucumbers will become larger, therefore, even though the farmer doesn't currently have those large cucumbers, Shapadami, this transaction should be permitted, Kamash Malan. That's why Rav has to teach us that no, only if he has such large cucumbers is a mutter. Ask the Gemara, Kaman, according to whom does this opinion follow? Kehai Tana. It follows the following Tana. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Haholech Lach Lefazizov, if somebody is going to milk his goats, or Ligzov, as we chalev, or to shear his sheep, or lirdas his kavarte, or to take the honey off his beehive, matzah chaveri, and he meets his friend on the way, vamaloi, and the farmer says to him, mash izi chol v'smachalach, whatever milk my goat will yield, I'm selling to you. Mash richeli goiz v'smachalach, whatever wool will come off my sheep, I'm selling to you. Mash kavarte roida, whatever honey comes off the beehive, machalach, I'm selling you. In all of these cases, taloch is mutter. The transaction is mutter. Which, this is a situation that we discussed. It's a forward contract where the seller does, the seller has this item, and although the brisa, they may end up with more milk than was paid for, still, it's permitted because since the amount to be delivered wasn't fixed, and therefore we don't know exactly if it's going to be more or less, this is a regular business deal where it's mutter. However, continues the brisa, Avalim Omaloi, if the seller says to the buyer, Mash Izi Chovas Kach V'Kach Mokalok, he gives it to me at a discount. Mash Recheli Goizus Kach V'Kach Mokalok, and this is the rate, which is a cheaper rate, that I'm selling you the wool. Or Mash Kavati Roy the Kach V'Kach Mokalok, in all these cases it's usur, because since he's specifying the amount to be sold, and it's being sold at a discount, because I'm laying out money up front, that's why it's a situation of ribbis. Vafagaf, says the Gemara, even though in all these situations, we have a situation of the memelu karovu, the milk, wool, and honey will be coming anyway, still, kiven the lester by ishata, since they don't exist at this moment, if it's being sold at a cheaper rate, it's osur, it doesn't fall into the category of yeshlai. Says the Gemara, Ikad Amri, but there's another version. Amar Rava, Rava says, Kim de Memel Karava, even in a situation where the cucumber, since the cucumbers will grow, so even though he's selling me now the small cucumbers, the cheaper cucumbers at the expensive price, it's still considered in the category of Yeshloi. Why is it considered in the category of Yeshloi? Kivim de Memele Karovu, since they're going to grow anyway to that degree, Shapadami, it's considered as if he already has those larger cucumbers, and since he already has the larger cucumbers, Yeshloi, forward contracting would then be mutter. The Mefarshim ask, the why, when we learn this sugya, are we not concerned with what we learned earlier in our Masechta, the previous parak, the issue of Einah, that he perhaps am being overcharged or undercharged? So the simplest answer that the Paiskim suggest is that, as we learned when we learned the Sugya Svayna, that if the overcharge or undercharge is less than a sixth, it doesn't fall under the category of Aino. And here we're referring that the difference is less than a sixth. Another teretz that the Nesivus suggests is that when is there a issue of Aino? If I walk into a store and I'm overcharged, that's a situation of Aino. Or if I pay too little, that's a situation of Aino. Here, however, there is another factor to be taken into consideration. That I'm laying out money to the farmer that the farmer should have earlier in the season, and he gets cash. He gets his cash earlier, which certainly is a consideration and certainly is a benefit that the farmer is looking forward to. So it's the factors to look into this transaction are not only what is the price of what's being bought and sold. We also have to take into consideration the fact that he's getting extra money, and that's why it's not a situation of Aino. Ask the Gemara, how could Rava say that something that's already here partially is considered Aino, is already considered Yeshloi? For Tanya, didn't we learn in the previous brisa that the Gemara just quoted, Kach v'kach, that if I'm buying milk or honey or wool at a cheaper rate earlier, it's not considered yeshloi, and therefore it's osur. It would not fall into the situation of a forward contract that's mutter. Answers the Gemara, hasam labmenei karavo. When we get extra milk, when we have wool that continues to grow, it's not an extension of what existed already. For what is the best proof? The shakla lahai, you could take away this milk, there'll be different milk. You could take away this wool, and you get different wool. However, hocha minei karavu, it's not that it's different cucumbers, it's the same cucumbers. Hocha minei karavu, the shakla lahai, because if you would take away these small cucumbers, it's not like there's going to be different cucumbers, since at the time of the agreement we have contracted for these small cucumbers, and it's these small cucumbers that will grow into the larger cucumbers, that's why these small cucumbers can be considered yeshloi, that already exist in the world. But based on this explanation, says the Meiri, it would only be acceptable if it's the exact cucumbers, those exact cucumbers that we transacted, that we did the deal with, that I bought them when they were small and contracted to get them when they're large. But according to this explanation, let's say we contracted for certain small cucumbers, and then he'll give me different cucumbers, then we don't have the concept of hani karavu, of minei karavu, and therefore would not be mutter. There are other rishonim that disagree and say that according to this ikad ram amri of Rava, as long as the farmer has small cucumbers, even if ultimately he gives me large cucumbers, but it's not those specific cucumbers that got bigger, it would still be mutter. Amar Abaya, says Abaya, Sharlei le'inish le'meim le'l'chavrei, a person could tell somebody else, Helech arbezuz, here you have four zuzim, a chavita de kamra, that I'm buying with these four zuzim a barrel of wine. Itok v'b'shusach, but I continue to say, if they get ruined, it'll be your responsibility, it'll be the seller's responsibility. So ask the Mefarshim, starting with Tosfos, but many other Rishonim ask the same question, why is this considered a specific extra stipulation? Certainly, if I buy wine from someone else and it gets ruined, so the seller is responsible that he sold me wine that got spoiled. Why is this considered something extra? So Tosfos says, Takva Rishusach doesn't mean only that it got spoiled. It also means that it got ruined for any reason, the seller is willing to accept that loss. The Ritva says, it's referring to a situation that I took the wine from the cellar and poured it into my own barrels. And since I poured it into my own barrels, maybe it's my barrel that caused the wine to spoil, and therefore the cellar should not be responsible. And that's why it's considered an extra stipulation. Another pshat, and the Ritva says, that the seller is taking responsibility for the spoilage, not if the spoilage takes place immediately, but even if the spoilage takes place for a while, a long while after I bought it, where certainly it's not necessarily because of the poor quality of the wine, that the seller still takes responsibility. If I take responsibility, however, if I, the buyer, take responsibility that if it goes up and down in value, that will be my gain or loss, then that's not considered a situation of ribus. Even though the seller is taking upon himself more responsibility than he normally would. We're going to learn later in our perek that any business transaction that falls into the category of karv l'schar, of rachik l'hefset, where one party is more likely to profit than the other, he only stands to gain, not to lose, is always in the category of ribis. So here too, since I, so to speak, guaranteed myself by making the seller accept upon himself that if the wine gets spoiled, he's going to have to take responsibility, why is this not in the category of ribis? And as the Mefarshim explained, even though the Gemara and the Havamina certainly knew that I accepted upon myself the yukra of Azula, this extra responsibility that I'm placing on the seller should put it into the category of karv l'schar v'rochik l'hefsid. Amalei answered Abayit Rav Shrabya, kiven mekabalei zoyla, since I'm taking myself the responsibility for any of the depreciation, it's still in the category of karv l'zeh, of a regular business deal, and therefore I'm responsible. And therefore it's not considered karv l'schav rochik l'hefsid, and will not be in the category of ribis. Says the Mishnah, hamavas chaveroi, if somebody lends money to someone else, lo yoda b'chatzer chinam, he should not live in the borrower's courtyard for free, nor may he rent from him less than the usual price, because in all these situations, it's under the category of ribis, because I'm giving the borrower is giving the lender something extra that he would not be entitled to. And you're never allowed to give the lender something extra, which causes the Mefarshim to discuss the following question. There are sometimes organizations which are known as credit unions, where members of this group pay membership fees to this group, that in case they'll ever need to borrow money, they could be able to borrow money from this group. And the question that comes up is, why is this not considered ribis? Because the person is paying for the opportunity to borrow money. And as the Paiskim explained, certainly in a situation where the borrower pays for the cost, the closing cost of a loan, in the times of the Gemara, it's known as paying for the cipher that writes the shtar, that's not considered ribis. That's part of the cost of constructing the loan. But what would be the halacha in a situation where I'm paying to be part of this group, and because I pay the part to be a member of this group, when I need a loan, I'll be able to get a loan? So some Paiskim want to connect this Shaila to a Machloikis HaPaiskim, Machloikis between the Mabit and the Ramah. They discussed the following situation. Shimon asked Reuven for a loan. Shimon also asked Reuven to be his son's teacher. And the way Shimon said, and Reuven agreed to both of those requests, he lent Shimon money, and he said that he'll be his son's teacher, and what will he take as a salary? The proceeds that Shimon receives from the profit of the money that he gave him to invest. So there's a machloikis hapaiskim if this transaction is mutter or not. Some paiskim, the mabit, says that this is mutter. He says because even though these two relationships occurred at the same time, then they're really not related one to the other, because Reuven could have been Shimon's son's Rebbe even if Shimon were not borrowing money from Reuven, and therefore the trend, this is acceptable. The Ramah, however, says since these two transactions are being connected to each other, even though they could have been independent, it's the situation of at least Avak Rivas. So the Pais go on to say that the same would perhaps be here, that if I'm paying money to a group, that I should be able to borrow money when I need to, that is considered Rivas. However, the Michas Yitzchak says that it's not necessarily the same, because the Michas Yitzchak says that in the case that I'm paying into this group to be able to lend money, that's just membership fee, and membership fee is mutter. There are paiskim that go on to say that certainly in a situation where even though I'm paying a membership fee to this group, doesn't mean that I necessarily the group will lend me money when I come to apply for a loan. Certainly that will be a raya that it's not considered a ribis payment and will be mutter. Furthermore, say the paiskim, that if my being able to that if the membership fee that I pay is not in any way connected, and it should not be connected to the amount of money I borrow, or to if I borrow, just the membership fee is separate and apart just to be part of the group, certainly the Paiskim say, the Bris Yehuda says that that would be another reason that it would be mutter. Says the Gemara, Amr Rabbi Yosef ben Binyumi Amr Rav Nachman Abisha Amru, even though the Gemara says Masechta Baba Kama if somebody lives in somebody else's property without the owner's knowledge, if it's such a property that the landlord had no intention of renting out for a fee, and the tenant had no intention of paying rent somewhere else, so as we learned in the Masechta Baba Kama, it falls onto the category of zeh nena v'zeh lo chaser. Here, if I borrowed money from someone else and then that person lives in my property, he would have to pay me the rent. Otherwise, it would look like ribis. Ask the Gemara, my kamashmon, what is Rav Nachman teaching us? Tanina, isn't this what we just learned in our Mishnah? That amavas chaveroi lo yoda b'chatzer b'chinot, if I the lender can't live in the borrower's property for free, so he can't rent something for him less than the normal fee. Neishu ribis, it falls under the category of ribis. Answers the Gemara, Imam Masnisen, if we only had our Mishnah, Havamina, we would say, when does the din of the Mishnah apply? Hani mila b'chotze de kaimel agra, only in a courtyard that is up for rent. The gavradov lemeger, or the tenant is regularly going to pay rent to live in a courtyard. As we said, the chotz that the Gemara Masechta Baba Kama refers to is a courtyard that's not up for rent, and the individual who's living there is a gavra, the loy of the lemeger, who normally doesn't pay rent. Emaloy, we would say that in such a case, since the borrower is not losing, nor is the lender gaining, it should be mutter. Kamash Malon, that because it looks like ribis, it's usur. So Taisus asks the obvious question. Taisus asks if, according to this, it comes out that a lender and a borrower who are friends and are in the habit of doing favors for each other will now never be able to do favors for each other anymore because it's a situation of ribbis. So Tosfos says two answers to this question. One answer Tosfos gives is that our Mishnah is only referring to something that's public, like living in a house. So since everybody sees that I borrowed money from someone else, and then if the person I borrowed from will live in my house without paying rent or paying a reduced rate, it's very conspicuous and therefore is awesome. Another teretz that Tosfos gives is that indeed, if there was a relationship between the borrower and the lender beforehand, where they had this close relationship with each other, and they certainly would have allowed the borrower would have allowed the lender to live in his property for free, then Enechanami says Tosfos, the Uri Mutter. However, Tosfos says that even if they had a friendly relationship in the past, the lender is not permitted to move into the borrower's apartment without his knowledge. Because if the lender takes the liberty of using the borrower's apartment or any other item that belongs to the borrower without asking permission, it appears as though he's taking advantage of the fact that he extended him a loan, and even though they have this close relationship, it would be awesome. The Mashal paskins like the first answer of Tosfos, and therefore he says that whenever it's something that's public with Beferesia, it would be usur even if they have this close relationship. However, the Mashal does say that in a situation where the lender was already living in the apartment prior to the loan, so in such a case it's obvious that the favor is not connected with the loan, and it would be mutter. In fact, I saw the Paiskim discuss a question that comes up quite often, or can come up. What would be the halacha if somebody borrows money from someone, and the person lends them the money, and as we're learning in our perek, he certainly lends them the money without ribbis, and now the borrower, on Shabbos, Yontif, whatever, they daven in the same shul, and the borrower buys an aliyah for the lender in gratitude that he lent the money. This certainly is a situation, and it could certainly be perhaps a situation where under normal circumstances this borrower would not normally buy an aliyah for the lender. And what should be the din? So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein says, now we have a problem. The borrower bought the lender an aliyah. The gabbai calls the lender up to the Torah, and the lender knows that what the borrower did is improper, but what's he to do? So Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein says, since he was already called up to the Torah, he has to go up, but what he should do, says Rav Zilberstein, is that he, the lender, should pay for the aliyah, not the borrower, and that will perhaps take away the problem of ribbis. The question that also comes up, Machloikus Rishonim, that we'll discuss more, is in this situation where the borrower gave the lender something that he shouldn't have. So we're not really referring to a situation of ribbis deraisa, because as we have been discussing, ribbis deraisa is only when there was cuts, when it was something that they made up upfront at a certain rate for a certain amount of time. Here, we certainly don't have a situation of ribbis deraisa, but it could fall onto one of two categories. It could be avak ribbis, or it could be mechzik ribbis. And there's a nafka mina lahalocha, because avak ribbis, which is ribbis derabbanan, just like we've learned the opinion of Rabbi Lozer, and we're going to learn the halacha is like Rabbi Lozer, ribbis deraisa, the malva has to return to the loiva. Avak ribbis, the ribbis derabbanan, should also be returned. But if it's only mechzik ribbis, then the halacha is that you don't have to return the ribbis. And as machlokes rishonim, what category will this fall into? Ikadamri, a different version of what Rav Nachman said. Amar Rav Yosef ben Menuni, Amar Rav Nachman. Apish amru hador b'chatzar chaver shloim bedatoi ein tzarch la'alos leischar. If somebody lives in an apartment that's not up for rent, you don't have to pay rent, haveni, but if the owner said to someone, lend me money, v'dobe chatzeri, and then you'll be able to live in my property, tzarch la'alos v'schar. Certainly, he would have to pay rent, otherwise, it would be considered a situation of ribbis. Ask the Gemara, says the Gemara, man damah haveyu, the first version, that says that even if that wasn't part of the stipulation, that even in a situation where I just borrowed money to lend the man that live in my property, certainly, says the Gemara, Koshke and Elveni, in a situation where I connect it, that it's certainly going to be considered ribbis. However, Mandam Halveni, the Mandam that says it's referring to the situation of Halveni, perhaps only that situation where this right to live in my property was connected to the loan, do we have a situation of ribbis. Aval Helveyu, if I just borrowed money and he lives in my property, which is not up for rent, there, loy. There's a machloikus rishonim that in the case of halveini, that everybody is agreeing it's a situation of ribbis, will that be considered ribbis deraisa, or will that be considered only ribbis derabbanan? My tama, what's the reason in the case of halveyu it would not be considered ribbis? Kivan that mekar lava dati ha'achi aisvei, that wasn't connected to the loan. Less lombar, it's not considered ribbis. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef Bachami takif avdid inch the masik bezuzin. Rabbi Yosef Bachami would take the slaves of people who he had a claim of money against them. Vava ba'avidita, and he would work with them. Amalei Rava Berei, so Rava's son said to him, my tama of imahachi. And as the Mepharshim explained, a son is not allowed to argue la'alocha with his father, but he's allowed to question his father the reasoning of what he's doing. Amalei, anok Rav Nachman sfirlei, I hold like Rav Nachman, dar Rav Nachman, avda noam kreis to loy shavi. A slave is not the worth the bread that fills his stomach. And to feed him is cost more than his work. And since I feed the slaves during this time, I'm not benefiting from him. Actually, they're benefiting from me. Amalei, so he said to him, Eim Amad Rav Nachman, when did Rav Nachman say it? Ki goin Dari Avdei, only like his servant Dari, the Merakad Bekubei, who used to dance in the barn, in the bars all day. Avid Achrinami Amar, is this the halacha by every Evid? That you could take him because you're doing the owner a favor because the amount the cost to support him is more than he earns. So Mepharshim make a beautiful point here. The Gemara Masechta Pesachim discusses speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim by the Seder, and the Gemara says that the Gemara quotes a story from Rav Nachman that he asked his servant Dore Avda the Mapakle Moral Lecheiris, a servant who was taken, who was let free, V'yavle Kasper Dahava, and he was given silver and gold. Ma Boil Memele, what does the servant have to say to his owner? Amale Boil Duil Shapchui, he has to thank him and praise him. Amale, so Rav Nachman says, Petartim, you have absolved me Meloim Manishtana. Point out the Mepharshim. Al Gemara just said, look at this, who Dori Avdi was. The Dori was an Evit who really didn't work hard. He spent the whole day drinking in the bar. Yet, the Dori recognized the great value and the great gratitude an Evit who's freed owes his owner. Certainly, must we, Pesach by night, when we were hard-working slaves to Paroi, recognize what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. Amalei, so Rav Yosef said to him, Anoki Hadar of Ganil Bakhtina Amarav Sfirulei. Dama, he said, Atoika Abdush Chaveroi, if somebody takes someone else's slave, Vasba Malacha, and he does Malacha with him, Potter, he's exempt from paying for use of the slave. The Nichalei, because the owner is satisfied, the Loinisterei Avdei, that his worker should not go idle. Tosfos goes on to explain, not only is he happy that he doesn't go idle, but he knows that if the servant is going to go idle, it could come to big problems what he does in his idle time. Amalei, so that's why he said to him, I'm allowed to take the servant because I'm supporting him and I'm keeping him out of trouble. Amalei, so Rava said to his father, Hani Mili, when is this halacha said, Heichadalai Masik Bezuzi, in a situation that the owner of the slave doesn't owe that person money? However, Mar, Kivin the Masik Bezuzi, but since you have a claim of money against the owner of that slave, Mechsik Ribis, it looks like Ribis when you taking that person's slave and using him, and therefore it should be Asr. Damar Rav Yosef ben Yuni, Amar Rav Nachman, Apish Amru, as we learned in our Gemara, that a dober chatzer chaver shleim datoi ein tzarch laal zeschar, and a piece of property that's not up for rent, I don't have to pay rent. Havei uve dober chatzeroi, but if I borrowed money from someone, then the lender may not live in my pad. Tzarch laal zeschar, he can't live in my property without paying me rent. Here too, since this owner of the slave owes you money, you're not allowed to use the slave, even though anybody else would be allowed to use the slave. Amalei Hadribei, I retract from my opinion and will not do so in the future. Point out to Rishonim, what he said was, Rav Yosef ben Chama said, I won't do so in the future, meaning in the future I won't use the slave. But he didn't say that I'm going to return back the money that I owe. Why? Explain the Mefarshim, because his opinion was that the halacha is that it's not considered like a vak ribis, it's only considered like mechzik ribis. And mechzik ribis, the halacha is that even though you're not supposed to take the ribis, you don't have to return it if you do.